This afternoon, so we'll get right into it. First up, we have a review of the Art Center's 2015 finances and a highlight for the 2016 budget. Shannon, did I see? I assume you're going to lead us off?
I am.
All right, so.
Consideration. I was here about a month ago where I had the opportunity to really present our program and mission, vision, values, and finances. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to come back and ask you to review our current situation as we project to complete this year and look forward to the next year. I am very proud of what the Art Center has been able to achieve and the momentum we have gained over the last couple of years. We've done that because of a terrific staff, outstanding board leadership, and really strong community partners. This time, or any time, I would hate to lose momentum and stride in that. And as such, we have been faced with challenges that we couldn't predict, but we knew would occur with our neighbor and the construction. And our team has been charged with tracking things and occurrences and reporting, and that is what the first document is here. Some of our projections and losses due to the impact. I do have to say that relationship and what is going on next door has been amazing. The Mayo Civic Center is so communicative to us, with us as the construction team, also very helpful. So this is about rentals and kids camp and things that have changed. We provided in most instances a 5-year comparison and 3-year comparison of where we've been in the past, marking that last year was our highest earned income year in our history. This projection of income loss and where we are and proposing at the end of the year this year, we predict that we will be at a $65,000 deficit from our budget and where we were last year. Our team projected this number about a year ago, and we were within $5,000 of that projection. So I think we're very confident with how we're tracking our numbers, how we're keeping our finances in order. I am joined today by our Vice President, Bradley Nuss, who has served as our Finance Chair and Treasurer for the last 2.5 years and has really been an amazing steward, asking the right questions and keeping us on track. So I think that stability is at our highest. This is what I present to both. The projected budget for 2016. I understand there might be a typo in your document. It is 2016. I predict those numbers, and I suspect those numbers will not change very much as we enter through the year and make a full recommendation. And lastly, our first draft of our capital improvement program is here too.
So I assume that your questions in the comments would be whether or not you can fund your 2015 deficit, and of course your 2016 budget would be considered by then sometime later.
Yes, yes. I would ask for that consideration if you would be able to help us through that and see what this can look like with a plan that we survive and thrive and celebrate the opening of Mayo Civic Center together. We are interested in that same goal, that common goal in 2017, and in the meantime, it is having an impact on us. And I would not even want to get into cutting programs and cutting those kind of resources.
I guess I'd throw in, too, being on the board and seeing what's done there, it's fascinating from the standpoint that, as you are all aware, among my skills is not art. But you know, to see the organization grow the way it has, and now you know where the city is no longer the primary contributor to programming there, it's really headed in the right direction. We all kind of understand how you know beautiful that rental space and how well the rental income has been. We all understood going into this project that the connectivity, the ability of people to access the Civic Center, and as well as the desirability of the programming there, was going to be hurt during the Civic Center expansion project. And you know, it's not something that we're going to do in perpetuity. But while this construction is going on, I want to be able to have them maintain the growth, maintain the programming that they have going on, and keep them on an even keel where they are losing some of these dollars through the opening of the Civic Center. And that would be representing the council on the board, that would be my recommendation.
I think it was pretty well understood that Shannon was, she had made that very clear to us that they were going to have some financial difficulties this year because of the construction. We as a council at that time had said we understood that and we would be supportive of that. And I remain that way. I don't plan on changing my opinion on that one bit, because I think they've done a very nice job of changing and increasing the revenue that they're able to make on their own. My question is, so when would they, this is just, you're telling us kind of where you project it, and then at the end of the year you'd be requesting that finances?
I would, for 2015, by the end of the year, I would hope that would come in. We are beginning to experience cash flow challenges. We're monitoring, we're looking, we know when certain grants come in, but as we've been looking at 2016, our rentals are really bad.
And I guess my feeling is I'd leave that for you to come back and tell us when you needed that money or how much of that money, where you're at, and where we're, because we're halfway through the year, a little over halfway, where that's at. And if your recommendation is you need a percentage of that now, I would support that. Again, we all knew that was going to happen. You've been very upfront with us, telling us when things were going to happen and where they were going to be. And you, like I say, your track record has been very, very good. One of the sad things for the Arts Center, I think, and for us as a community, is we're losing you. So, because you have been very responsive to what the council has said. So I guess my question is just, at what point do we need to start helping you with some of these funding?
I hope soon.
Okay. Understood.
I think passing the mid-year report, passing, I think we're pretty solid on the numbers where we'll be at the end of the year. So
That's one question I had, Shannon. Knowing that the construction will continue into 2016, do your 2016 projections, are they somewhat dampened based on what you're seeing in 2015?
Yes and no. I feel we've done an outstanding job up to this point in 2015. We're close to that. The impact is actually the following year. We couldn't know that. I think, you know, perception, access, and getting there is what is happening to 2016. We're working hard with new marketing ideas and tactics, and if we can get them in the building, our staff can generally rent the space. So it's actually getting there. So.
Well, I'm just trying to make sure we're looking at it realistically so that we don't fall into perhaps another deficit situation about this time next year. That's why I'm just wondering if you maybe made some adjustments just to account for some of the realities of the construction. Nothing against the program, just certain realities about construction.
Well, she hasn't made any adjustment in the 2016 budget, and that's $63,000 or $62,600 more than granted this year. So I assume that is the adjustment.
And I, part of that too, if you read through the details, there's some, you know, there's some discounted space to try and keep it active in there as well on the rental side, and you know, that's to be expected with this as well. And I think, you know, we have some rough guidance for what the needs are as we look today, but if there's consensus around, you know, keeping them going till that, you know, beautiful opening in 2017, I think that gives them some assurances in how they plan their operating.
So either Mr. Wojcik or Shannon, are you advocating that the shortfall of roughly $146,000, is that number that we should consider now, or do you come back a little later in the fall once that number is more firm, or are you pretty comfortable with this number?
Let me answer that if I can. And my understanding is the shortfall projected for 15 is about $67,000,
right,
which is the only amount that you would handle at this time. Then we'll come forth looking at the 2016 budget that you'll handle in the coming months. And if you agree with that number, around that number, then sometime in 16 you will see how they're doing.
Right. Mr. Campion.
And I hate to double back, but I didn't feel like I fully understood the answer. The $1,900 and four rentals, is below what we typically would have allocated at this
way
point.
Below.
Okay.
Yes.
I sent a note to Matter. So it sounds like we're just going to come back with, based on the projection at the rate we're currently getting them, we're going to budget for 2016 and fix 2015. Is that, everyone's in agreement with what's happening?
If I may, we are about $45,000 behind where we were exact same time last year. That is on page 2 of...
Sure, and you'll just budget, I just want to, sorry.
Right.
You're going to budget that for next year, so we're just going to pass one value at budget time and assume that that has fixed the gap. Okay.
All right. Mrs. Means.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to thank you so much for your leadership and for your excellent staff to raise us to a level that we're known in Rochester and throughout the United States and internationally. Secondly, I want to thank Donna from the Mayo Civic Center for working with you on these very difficult times. And your budget, your programming, the arts camp, you had less members, that was a deficit. You know, the weddings, of course, the cancellations, and I think I read something about the Jehovah Witnesses were having some challenges as well.
That would be more for Donna.
Okay.
That would be a question for Donna,
yeah,
more so.
Strike that question. I know there have been access constraints, too, so I just want to say I want to continue to see you thrive, and I fully support this releasing of the funds that are shortfall projected this year.
Shannon, you started to touch on a little bit. You mentioned that we're doing things differently, and I would hope that when we saw this coming that we wouldn't have just done business as usual, because it is a challenge that we have to deal with. Can you share with us, when you started to say you've done a lot of things differently, can you share with us some of the things that you did do differently to try to fight this and to try to deal with this in a proactive manner?
Sure. For the earned income, we reduced some of our rates. We gave away some incentives, meaning extra hours. So all of our renters, we gave extra hours, which was income that we were losing, to encourage them to get them there. Increased access to our programming. And by the end of the year, we're going to absorb the cost of admission. I think trying to get people there free will help.
I noticed your admissions was only $5,000. Is that?
And it's even less than that for this year.
Is that just the in-kind? So what are you actually, is that actually where you're charging people?
Yes.
Is in so the in-kind, how much does that bring in? Is that just a small amount, or is that just included in that?
In the admissions, or
in when people come in your door, don't you have in-kind there?
Yeah, it's fluctuation
or
between 30
donations, that kind
yes.
of stuff. Yeah,
it's not in-kind, but it's a charge.
Okay, all right, that's included in that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Other questions, comments? Mr. Brunvold.
I'd like a little bit of question on the cash flow, and that was, are you able to cover your cash flow until the end of the year without this additional money prior to the end of the year?
It would help greatly to have it for the end of the year, but it will require us moving some money around from deferred to the rent and moving. We would do that under advisement and counsel, but yes, I think with the deposits that we do not have from 2016, that is where that's we're feeling it too. Usually at this time, we could use 2016 deposits to go back and help through. Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Wojcik, what are you recommending as far as the 66,000?
My recommendation is simply to honor the request for this year, provide some guidance in terms of we're going to continue to work with you next year, and leave the details of the timing and the transfer of money to city administration.
Others agree with that?
I would just ask the city administration let us know when they've done that, or
yes.
how much they've done.
It would be something that you would have to approve by resolution at the end of the year anyway, in that transfer.
Right.
Yep. And don't we handle all those transfers kind of all at once at the end of the year?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Mayor.
Question, I hope this isn't too personal, but looking at salaries, you're going to be leaving. Is there any timeline as to when you hope to have, I won't even call it a replacement, but it's someone filling that position, and how does that translate to next year, is the budget based on having someone in your position for the full year? Does that get adjusted in any way, and even the rest of this year?
I don't expect much adjustment. It was considering, it's been last year in movement, and all staff and the ED is in that figure. And I don't expect that to change very much.
Okay.
One thing I'd point out is, the organization is going through a transition in a number of ways, and, to Mr. Ruska's point, one of the really neat opportunities here is we get to take a look at what the skills are of the next executive director who's coming in, who I'm sure will be outstanding. No Shannon, but outstanding nonetheless. And, and take a look at complementing the existing staffing, and there's some other changes there with maybe a more fitting role, and maybe there's a more efficient way to do that. So there's nothing off the table right now at that point.
All right. So, unless there are other comments, I assume there's consensus that we'll address the shortfall as suggested or recommended by Mr. Wojcik and carried out by administration. Mr. Ruska?
Ms. Call, we will make it clear that we will get back to the status quo when this construction and these challenges are done. We'll be back to, this isn't a long-term change. This is just so to speak. Right? Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Mr. Mayor.
Being a little lighthearted on this, when I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the mayor of Orlando asked me about Jeff Shannon, and I told him, I said, you're making a big mistake. Still went ahead with it, so I'm going to do much more.
Oh, good effort. We will miss Shannon.
All right, thank you, Shannon,
thank you very much.
Wishes and good luck in your new endeavors as you move away from our wonderful community.
Thank you all.
All right. Yeah, really.
It's a real problem. Yeah. Going to lose somebody.
Quit selling our city so
much. I think it's good that Mr. Mayor, we stop letting you go anywhere. We just keep you in town because you're giving our people away.
All right. Next up, we have a continuation of our discussion on broadband alternatives. Mr. Wojcik will lead off, and he has one or two guests, Michael Brand and one or two others. So I'll let you introduce the topic.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about broadband. And as I said last time, there comes a point where you have to make tough decisions. Once again, today will not be that point where any tough decisions are required. Really, there's going to be four things that I'm hoping to achieve with the information today. First is I want the City Council to receive some information and some updates because we're all wondering about that. Second, give everybody on the Council here an opportunity to ask questions about the information we're being presented. And then the third, we're going to be receiving some data today. I got a little sneak peek over lunch today, but ultimately what we want to do is we want to give our departments the opportunity to pour through the data and challenge the model and, to make sure that all the assumptions are fair for our community before we take a step where we might have to make a decision on independently verifying that data. And lastly, there's going to be a couple different paths that we could potentially go down in the future if we choose to pursue this that are going to be presented as well. And it'll give opportunity to staff to just discuss these different options a little bit because they're two very different paths that we could potentially take. And just a little bit of background on this. Since our last meeting, a couple of interesting figures which I've learned. In 2010, the state had a statewide broadband goal for 2015. And basically what it said is we wanted to be able to provide citizens of Minnesota with download speeds 10 to 15 megabit per second and upload speeds of 5 to 10 megabits per second. Well, one of the fascinating things is here we are in Rochester, Minnesota, and many of our citizens don't even have access to those 2015 goals here now in 2015. We still can't in a lot of places get those upload speeds. Furthermore, broadband has a very clear definition, and to be considered broadband, you need 25 megabit download speed and 3 megabit upload speeds. And as I sent a note to the, through administration to the council, and of the 8 elected officials here, 6 of us only have one option for broadband in the city of Rochester. So I know there's been some discussion that there's a lot of options out there. There's not, and that's reflective in the fact that if you want standalone broadband from Charter right now, it's $60 a month for what is nothing in particularly special. So while it's a nuisance for some of us, I continue to be focused on the needs of the city going forward in terms of having the technology to meet our own needs, and also the needs of you know, the kids in our schools, the 30-35% on free and reduced lunch, you certainly can't afford $760 or $720 a year for broadband. And a lot of communities are taking up this issue because they, like I believe, broadband is the is a critical utility for the future and the most important educational tool that they need access to that a lot of them just aren't getting right now. Recently, RPU did a study, a scientific study with 1,200 samples, margin of error of 2.7%. And a couple of highlights from that is one of the questions asked was, please tell me if you support RPU investigating any of the following service offerings or infrastructure improvements in the near future. And three of them that scored very high. The population, 84% was interested in moving electric lines to underground. 82% was interested in smart grid digital meters. And 76% was interested in RPU investigating offering broadband internet. The interesting thing about those three is they tend to actually all work together. They're very technologies that rely on each other. One other highlight, and we received some communication, is that RPU tends to be beloved in the community, has very high customer satisfaction, and far and away the lowest customer satisfaction of utility providers was broadband video in the community, and none of you are probably particularly surprised to hear that. One of the conclusions the polling firm put out there is consideration may be given to offering broadband internet to RPU's customers. Area internet providers scored low ratings, and customers may consider this offering simply due to RPU's current level of exceptional services. The real issue here is whether or not RPU is involved in anything or whether we do anything is something that we have to consider for a community, but I'm sure you've gotten the feedback that I have that what is going on in Rochester today is just completely unacceptable, particularly on the business side, which demands better services than what are currently available today on the upload side. And we have a very real possibility of eventually getting to a point where we have fiber to the home throughout our community at a very reasonable rate. And with that introduction, I'm going to introduce Michael Brain. I'll let him introduce the other guests as well. But he's going to give us a little informational update on the work that he's been doing and what we could possibly expect from this in Rochester. So, Michael, hand it over to you.
Can I possibly...
Probably right down here is where you're going to want to plug in.
Okay. Is there a way I can connect this, or?
Dale?
Yeah. All right, for a
minute.
This
connector.
I have one connector on my computer right there. If I can take
you can
off.
Use that.
Okay,
use this one?
Yeah. I'll just have to redo my reboot it.
Okay.
You sure?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
All right.
Now we got the big guns involved.
I don't know that you're making your case that government should be involved in technology.
This is private sector.
Well, it's got a mixture. You got two government guys there.
This is a public-private partnership.
It's going well, huh?
I don't need to make that opinion.
Maybe you should say they're paid depends upon them getting this going. Having fun yet?
It's all good.
That's something.
So, apologize, I didn't put this into slides, but let me go backwards to come forward, since it's been a few months.
Real quick, could I ask, are we going to get copies of all this so we don't have to take lots of copious notes?
You're going to get copies of all of this.
Okay,
so
thank
what
you.
I will do at the end of this conversation this afternoon is I'll actually push the button, and if you remember, we said that we would actually give you a copy of the business case in this draft form without the formulas on it. So we have actually mastered that process. And so I'll send that to Michael, and then, you know, without the process of killing trees. And I didn't want to put it in PDF either because that just kills trees, and then you can't look around at anything that's inside of it. So I'm gonna basically I have a couple, three things to highlight to you. And I'm going to take about 15 minutes to go over this at about 100,000 foot level, and I'm going to ask one of my business partners to come up and talk a little bit about the alternatives. So what we did was we built essentially a classic business case with all the performance statements, with all the inputs. And so what I did over the past couple, 3 months is I actually took a kind of a deeper look at all of the documentation that you have on your website. I've asked Michael for some information from the staff, and we kind of put that together. Now, what we ended up with, and I'm going to do this again at a very high level, is we took a look at the number of meters and the number of units here in the housing. So I looked at 10 in 2010 and 2013, and then I basically, it's a little higher than the numbers that you actually see here in your customer base of about 49,000, if you want to think of them as homes passed and businesses passed. Because there's some level of churn in any city, right? So I backed out 2,000 or 3,000 units at this point, and it's probably grown beyond that. Now, the other thing that is interesting in this particular model, and again, this is at a very, very high level, is we took a look at the community and said that if you put a service together and you build a fiber optic network, what percentage of the folks in this community, conservatively, would take that service if it was priced right, put together right? And so we arrived at a number of 45% of the community would actually move from their current players and move to this particular network. And we use that number across the United States in municipalities that I've worked with over the last decade. Some are as high as 78 or 79%. Some are in the 40% range in a super competitive environment. But given the kind of service that you're looking to provide to the community and what's currently here in the community, yeah, this is probably a conservative number. We said that of those 45% that would take it, 43% would look at a broadband internet service. On the residential side, that 23% would look at some form of voice service that would come as part of this package, and that 16% would look at some video package. Now, the reason that we put the numbers in that particular way, I will show you, and it'll start hopefully to make a little bit of sense to you, because in the writings that Michael sent to me back from staff, the appetite in your city is on the internet side, initially. On the voice side, and because you know the rules here in the state of Minnesota, there would be some sort of a third-party voice service that would be provided. And the same on the video side, that the city was not interested in actually getting into the video business or into the voice business, but they would look to have a provider come over that network like a toll road and provide some level of revenue per connection that they would provide back to the city. So it's only a revenue play, whereas this, the first piece of it, the internet piece, is more of a revenue and cost of goods play. And I'll show you how that works inside the business model. And questions are good at any time. And probably one of the first questions is how much, right? How much is this actually going to cost you, right? And I'll go through the complete details, but you're looking at financing about $35 million to actually build a network that would pass and serve about 45% of the community, just as a rough number, right? And I will explain rough in a second as well. But let me kind of take you through this package to kind of give you an example and maybe open the floor a little bit for questions. So, the way the model was put together is we assumed that there would be some cost to come to your home and set up the service.
And in this case, I used $49.95. I built 5 internet service levels. As you notice, I didn't put any speed on it. There's a reason I didn't put any speed on it, in the interest of transparency, because it doesn't matter. Right? Once you buy a pipe from someone like Level 3, or CenturyLink, or Windstream, or AT&T, their cost of goods sold is spread across the number of people that are actually on the network. Mm-hmm. Right? So behind the scenes, you get a certain amount of bandwidth here inside the network itself, and then there's a certain amount of speed that goes away. If you were here in the last meeting, I talked about the fact that for every gigabit of service on the back end, there's about 2,000 people with gig service on the near end, which would be all of you here in the room. So I went to my daughter, who actually works at CenturyLink and does this for a living, and I said, sell me a 10 gig pipe and put it into a city and give me a price. And so the number I used is actually, again, a conservative number, because her number is much higher than other service providers, but it's good service. And so I spread that across the 22,000 homes that would actually take the service over time. All right, so that's how you arrive at a cost of goods sold for that particular service itself. Now, that doesn't factor in, but the business case does, all the other things like the staff you have to build, the depreciation, the network, all the equipment you have to buy and maintain, and all that. That's all part of the business case. But this is just to try to give you a feel for what happens when you're trying to provide a level of service in the community. So what does that mean? It means that you could sit back and say, for example, for those that do not have the kind of money that they can pay for the service today, you can set up an internet service level at $9.95, which is something that a lot of service providers do today for those that are not privileged enough to have the kinds of jobs and money that can afford internet service. And this could be a service that has the same internet rules, for example, as the school or the library, right, where they can only serve to certain areas. But someone can still have service. And then you can set these service levels any way you want. And I price them just because of some of the pricing that I know that's out there in the world today. So basically, I set a percentage to go along with that service mix so that you had, I'll call it a baseline of service that you could provide to the community. So it means that you could set $49.95 to be 50 megabits metro. You could set 68 to be 100. You could set 100 to be a gig. These numbers are all easy to play with and take a look at. Right. Then I did the same thing for the telephone service, for the video service. But what I did in these cases is, it's not a retail service. All that you see here is someone coming over this network and providing a telephone service. And if you look at the cost of goods sold, it basically says that they would contribute to the city's network about $3 a month per subscriber that they serve. And if you go down the TV services and you start to look at the numbers, somewhere between $2 and $4 per month, if they have a service in your network that's being provided as an end user. Let's use Prism as an example. There's a good one. Probably some of you folks know about that. And that's in close to home, where they would come in and provide over your network that service to an end user. They would pay back to the city about $3 to $4 per sub per month for that, out of the $100 per month they charge. So that's how it was built. Those are the bases. And when you get down to looking at this over a 20-year capital review, your in-home electronics, your the electronics outside your house, the systems that go along with it, the fiber optic network, the total cost of ownership of that network over the 20 years is about $42 million. And again, we finance about $34 million because there's profit in there that covers that during the cost of actually paying off the loan. So at the very, very high level, what does this mean to the community if you were to make this investment? If you made this investment and built it out over 4 years and were able to achieve this kind of a take rate, it basically says that you'll be cash flow positive with construction about 3 years in. And you would essentially have paid off the loan in about 5 years and 6 months. This is totally doable, folks. Totally doable. This case is very similar to many cases I've run. They run in about a 3-year cash flow positive model. They run in about a 6-year payback model at about a 45% rate. Now, the numbers are based upon pieces of information that I got out of all of your RPU information. Let me give you just a feel for this. So, at the highest level, you're looking at building about 300 miles of fiber inside the community, and about another 300 miles of drops. So if you think of like a transformer from an electrical side to the side of your home, or barriers to the side of your house, there's about 300 miles of distribution fiber network and about another 300 miles of drop network that has to be built. The costs of building that are basically calculated by an engine. This is an engine, this fiber calculation engine is an engine that Alcatel-Lucent uses. There's a big search engine company that's in the fiber optic business. It uses the exact same engine that's underneath this. So we've tried it out in a lot of communities here in the United States. We know that we're very accurate in terms of what this fiber optic network is going to cost you and how it's going to be put together. I had an opportunity when I left you the last time to spend some time and actually ride the network here, mostly the electrical network, because that's what I get to see. And the poles, the lines that you have here, and your ability to actually place the tree trimming that's been done, the community is in great shape if you were to add another network to this. Your infrastructure is in very, very good shape. Now, what I couldn't see was in the manholes and the underground portion of this, so I do not know how much infrastructure is available to actually build the underground portion of this, but I do know from an aerial perspective, which is over half of the community, you're in great shape if you want to go forward and build one of these networks. Okay, so there are probably another 7 or 8 tabs that are in here, just from so that everybody understands as you go through these results. Again, I'm going to do this at a very high level. There are revenue projections. There are all the typical consolidated CapEx, OpEx, consolidated income statements, consolidated balance sheets. I've tried to do a very, very comprehensive review of all the numbers. However, and this is where it gets interesting. So, the numbers are a good test of all of the information that's available today that's out there, plus my ability to ride around and having done this for about 4 decades. However, what I'm hoping I will get out of this conversation is the opportunity to come back and work with your staffs to test these numbers. Because even though these numbers are on paper and they're readily available, and we have some experience, the fun part about this, and the part that I think solidifies the situation, is to get the staffs from groups like RPU come in, look at these numbers with us, and try to first understand them, to challenge them, right? So that we can take this graph and refine it for you, and also get the inputs that, quite frankly, I don't have at this point, which are if I want to do smart grid, if I have water and sewer and gas and I wanted to turn those meters wireless and call that up so that I can be on this, see, turn off my air conditioning, I want to see how much I'm using in terms of those services, right? And also for the staffs, they can see what's going on in a real time. I mean, we all hear about all the stuff that's going on TV about emissions controls and trying to use alternative energy, etc. So when you think about this network today, when we think about broadband, I'm going to ask you to stop thinking about broadband and start thinking about what kind of infrastructure you want in your community over the next 10 to 15 years. You think about it for roads, you think about it for water, you think about it for electricity and sewer. I need you to start thinking about what you would want a network like this to do for your community. So, that's my ask. Let me open the floor for a minute.
Mr. Bilbeck,
some of your numbers, I'm just wondering, because we have about 500 miles of roads, and you were saying about 300 miles of fiber. So I'm just curious how 300 stretches to 500.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you're going to build to the, well, if there's 300 plus 374 and drops, so 674.
Maybe explain that term.
Oh, okay. So you have backbone, you have backbone roads, you have backbone fiber. Okay, so there's going to be about 300 miles of that. And then off of that is what you would call your last mile of fiber system, about another 374 miles.
So it's about
674 altogether. Okay. Is what you actually have to do.
All right, because you were saying three, and I was questioning how three covers, when they're sitting now, currently it's 500 plus miles of roads, what you're going to do with 300. Also, my question, and you talked about covering it in about five years, 3.6 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Is that with new technology coming online as well? Or is that just with that, whatever the system is you put in place, is the system that's in place and that's it?
No. The system that would be built or constructed, there's a couple different ways to look at this. So you can build a couple of different models. You can build a model that would cover all, we'll say, 500 miles of road, just for the sake of argument. Right? So the first job you're going to do is construct 100% of the roads and then look for the folks to come on. Or build a model that says, well, which parts of this community are interested in doing it, and so you build out that way. So that's one way to approach the problem. I hope I'm answering your question.
I'm listening. I'll let you know if it doesn't.
All right. So those are two different ways, kind of a pay-as-you-grow model, and another one is to try to blanket the whole city in the beginning, right? So that becomes your construction model. This model assumes that you will pass in the 600 and some miles of fiber and drop fiber that comes along. It assumes that you will just pass enough homes to cover off 45% take rate. So you may construct in such a way that you pass, let's say there's 50,000 homes, you pass 30,000 homes and they have a 72 or 73% take rate. Right? So the cash that's put together for this model is designed to cover off that eventuality. So in other words, I did not go to every home. I did not put a piece of fiber to every single house. I did not build electronics to every single house and then raise my hand and say, here we go. Right? I didn't do it that way. So the model, the model can be a bit misleading in that sense, but what it does is it says that you have cash enough to build a fiber optic network that will basically cover off 45% takeaway.
But you're also talking, I'm asking about new technology. So is there enough built into this that covers technology along the way?
There are three refreshes built into the capital, three capital refreshes built into the business case. They are designed to add electronics for a couple different eventualities. So one is for speed. Right, so from the routers that connect you to the world, there are dollars in there to increase the technology from, they're basically built for 100 gigs on the get-go, but then the technology is set to go to 400 gigs, right, even though it's, you know, right now your city would probably take about 10 gigs out of two paths, about 20 gigs would probably take care of every service you can think of today. But it's set for 100 and then refresh for 400 in year 10. The other thing is there are dollars in there. There are maintenance dollars and operational dollars all the way through this business case as you'll read it. But there is only a partial capitalization of moving individuals' homes upward. Okay, so let me explain. So next month, my company will launch the first 10 gig city, 10 gig to the home city here in the United States. In that refresh for them, we only assume that about 10 or 15% of the people will actually want 10 gigs of their houses. Right? So your capitalization is designed like that. And this is why I want to talk to the staffs, because you may have a completely different view of Rochester. You may decide that everyone is going to want to move to 10 gigs in 7 or 8 years. And part of the test of that conversation is if this model is very fluid. So that to make that change only takes about 2 minutes. But I don't know the answers to those kinds of questions at this point.
So when you were talking about doing it by sections, how long would you anticipate taking to make the whole city, to cover the entire city of Rochester?
Somewhere between 4 and 5 construction periods. So it's going to take about, it's really going to take about 4 or 5 years of concentrated effort to actually build this network.
You could do it
faster, but we'd have to change the model.
Sure. And that's available regardless of whether it's apartment buildings?
No, that will not matter.
Yes. Mr. Campion.
So 4 to 5 year build out.
Yeah.
Pays for itself. What year did you say?
About year 6.
Okay, so.
6 and change.
All right. Sorry, I wanted to make sure that was jiving in my head. So we haven't even built the system yet, and we're paying parts of it off. At the adoption rate is 45% at per whatever we build out. Correct.
Correct. Okay. Right. And you're looking at, you know, a couple other things that are in there. As you start to read through the details, you see that, you know, I took a 2-year holiday on interest only payments. That may not be possible depending upon what your ratings are with your bond, whether it's geo bonds or revenue bonds, and how you lay that out. So that assumption may be valid or invalid in play, right? The speed of the build out in terms of your willingness to want to do this and build larger sections faster is something that we can play with in the numbers as well. But this is the piece of it, as the council, this is the piece of it that I really want to test out, if you'll allow me to, with your staffs, because I don't know the answers to the appetite of the community in terms of wanting to do this. Now, Michael has sent me a study last night and said, it seems pretty clear that you folks want to take a much closer look at this, but that's not my point.
Okay. So, question I have, if I understood your numbers correctly, you said a full build-out for roughly $42
million? Mm-hmm. $42 million, yes.
And how... So when and this goes back to one of your introductory comments, am I going to see how you arrived at those numbers, what assumptions you built into your model?
Sure.
I mean, not now, because you said something about we'll get the spreadsheet, but something hidden.
The formulas.
Formulas. Why not the formulas?
No, that's intellectual property.
Yeah.
So you're asking me to accept your numbers at face value without seeing the assumptions or models or formula?
No, you can. It's pretty easy to backward engineer where the numbers come from, and if that's a question that we have to go through, then I'll sit down with you at any time and spend as much time as you want to go through that.
And the reason I picked that particular number, you know, some of the admittedly anecdotal, some of the feedback I get is there's no way you're going to build out a network for a city this size for $42 million. So I would challenge that, and I would expect that if we get into this, that we would challenge those numbers.
I would sincerely hope so.
Therefore, I'm going to want to see some of the assumptions that go into the modeling and the case study.
Well, fair enough. And we can sit down and go through those whenever you'd like.
I would even throw beyond that. That's part of the intent of having them sit down with staff and go through these numbers, because staff, you know, they have the expertise to really challenge these numbers. And then if we get past that point and we're still, you know, still shows the phenomenal business case that it does today, then we actually take the step of hiring a third party with the technique to independently verify the numbers as well.
Yeah. But I do agree with you. I don't always know what I don't know, right? And I'm only going by the pieces. I'm only going by what's published from RPU, from what I've been able to see here. So, for example, I'll give you the best example I can. So, if the city were to build a network, I have staffed up 19 folks with certain salaries in order to make that happen. Right. So, for example, here, in the case, when you look at all the inputs, when you have the opportunity, right? So, I've staffed up, for example, with a set of salaries. Right? I don't know, sitting here right now, I don't know if these salaries look great or right, wrong, close, not so close. Right? And further, and I do agree with you, right? I went and built you a staff complete with a manager and field technicians and marketing and research and sales personnel and network operators for a 24/7 network in order to manage this whole thing. But I don't know if these are the right numbers or not, and that's why I need staff to kind of help. So to your point, I think we should challenge everything that's in here. Right? I couldn't agree with you more.
At some point in the discussion, I'd be curious to get some comments from Dale Martinson, just as we would consider interrogating the data and modeling and the numbers. You can do it now, or you can do it later.
Do it now.
I mean, I'm not sure. The comment that it pays for itself in 6, you're talking about cash flow in a year? Is that what you're talking about?
EBITDA in a year, cash flow in 3, and actually essentially paying where you're in a position where you're paying off the loan or you're paying off the $34 million.
Making debt service payments but not paying off the loan. You're still talking about going to your bond very soon.
That's correct. Yeah. And we can go into excruciating detail. But the other part is length of interest only at 24 and 12 months for the two bonds that you would actually take. Don't know if that's right or wrong, depending upon your modeling. I use 4% interest rate, and I just hope Janet keeps quiet for a couple more months, but I don't know if that number is right or not. So there are a lot of things to test. There are, you know, whether it's that. I do agree that from a network piece of it, for example, with some of the things that I left in, besides integration services, are if you're going to go into this business of residential, you're going to need a billing system, and I dropped in $500,000 for that billing system. But I don't know if that's right or wrong. Do you want to reuse the existing one that you have, and so on, right? So those are all the kinds of questions that I'm hoping we can come to the table with.
Mr. Hickey.
And before we go too much farther with like hypotheticals, do you have a series of similar sized cities that have done this and have been successful that you could point to?
Sure.
I think it'd be important.
Yeah. We can go with some on the Bristol, Virginia, Bristol, Tennessee, or Mooresville size. We can go to the Chattanooga size, the Lafayette, Louisiana size. So we can take a look at all of those and where they're at. In the case of Chattanooga, which is a little bit bigger than you, has about 150,000 meters, probably. They go up against Comcast and AT&T Uverse, very similar to Prism. They are approaching 50% market share after 5 years. They've saved the folks in their community 3 rate increases on the electrical side by using money that they have gotten from the voice of the UN data side. They do it all themselves. They build a complete smart grid, so they use that fiber optic network to drive everything from end of line loss to transformer sizing to interrupters to reroute power when things go wrong. So they add back about somewhere between $35 and $40 million a year to the budget in profit is what they do. And as I said, 3 rate increases was probably another $100 or $150 million. Same. But you can talk to them directly. They'll be happy to get you their phone numbers and email.
I'd like that. If you could provide us those cities and their contact people that would be very helpful.
Sure. Be happy to do that.
Mr. Campion.
So when we first talked, March? Was it March when we started this? Way back when. Feels like a lifetime ago. We kind of talked about the city maybe, you know, wanting to focus on internet, and you said
these systems really only turn positive if you have voice and video on it. And I see voice and video is in it, and so I hope it sounds like that was probably an effort to make it positive. I just want to understand what portion of the positive sway is voice and data co-leasing on the network.
Okay, that's a good question.
Excuse me, voice and TV or video on
the network. It's a good question. So the argument I made at the table in March was that to get consumers to move from the network they're on to the network that you want them to be on, it's a hard sell to get them to move if you cannot offer them all three services. So even though the price may be right, it's the bundle that the competition will offer. So what I tried to do in this business model, maybe not very successfully, is to say, if you build this network, you still need to have a place for a voice provider and a video provider. What we have seen in these in internet-only networks is that you can approach somewhere close to 30% of a take rate over time. But because the bundle is a very, not necessarily sexy thing, but it's kind of it's used to set one offset one price against the other price, it's very hard for consumers to get away from that. So that was the argument at the time. So I tried, maybe a little bit of a weasel in the sense that Michael and I kind of kicked us around and said, okay, let's see if you were to put a voice provider over the top that didn't belong to the city, if you brought a video provider over the top that didn't belong to the city, and asked them for a small amount of revenue, how would that affect the business case? And so that's what's in there. It's, again, a starting point. And we can take it up. And part of the, I'm sorry.
So are the rates, sorry, and I'm just going to hammer, but are the rates that you see for that, is that indicative of what's in this slide, or is that kind of guesswork depending on the city and depending on the providers that are interested in your network?
It is, if we took Midwest Video, for example, out of Madison, Wisconsin, and said to them, come and drop 200 channels over here, what would you pay the city per sub per month to actually come in here and provide that video service? The number's going to be somewhere between $3 and $6 per sub per month.
How many providers do you typically see on these systems? I mean, does it become more competitive because the system exists?
If you decide to create what we call an open service model, the answer is you, up until this year, you could only have one video service provider on a given fiber optic network anywhere on the planet Earth. One of the things that we did for the gentleman that I introduced next is they asked us to be able to create a fiber optic network that not only would have multiple internet service providers and multiple voice providers, but a multiple video.
Is that in this? Is that cost of that in here?
The cost of that is not in this model. It can be in this model. In other words, the equipment is there, but the design is not. It's pretty easy to change. It would go up a little bit, but not much. So, okay.
I think that comes.
Let's drill back. A couple questions. Along with supplying information on population, I'm interested in mileage because cities are different densities and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested also in mileage of the cities. We know that Rochester is roughly 54 miles in the area, so I'm interested in comparisons there.
Yeah.
Also, because of the sprawl, I'm interested in what kind of additional costs there are for equipment, what kind of equipment would have to be looked at, if that's something you did look at or did not. And I'm interested also coming back to a comment that Mr. Wojcik has made about this and the interest in pricing, especially when we start looking at what would we be providing the lowest end to make sure that our people who have limited income can afford this
sure.
broadband. So I'm interested in the pricing as well. So.
Yeah, so again, and all good stuff. If you look at what we did real fast, is for those that couldn't afford it, we used the $9.95 a month.
And what's that give them?
Whatever you'd like it to be.
I think what they're saying is that the cost of providing the internet is irrelevant because you can give everyone the same service essentially for the same amount. $4 is what it costs to provide any tier of internet.
If you're wondering where all the money is in the voice, video, and data business, it's in the data business. You can ask any service provider. right? I mean, you're just getting that wonderful opportunity to look underneath the covers as a community and say, what does it really cost them to provide you the service? What service you provide as a community is entirely up to you. That's why I made this internet level service 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. I have one community in Kansas who decided that everybody gets a fiber optic connection, everybody gets smart grid, and everybody gets a gig of service day one out of the box, $40 a month. That's it. And that's the price. Now, they set their business case up so that $40 was the lowest possible price they could charge to pay off the bond over 20 years. Mm-hmm. In other words, they did it backwards. They went to the end and said, how much does it cost to build a network? I'm going to give everybody a gig. I'm going to connect every meter, water, sewer, gas, and electric. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to work backwards. How much do I have to charge them as a minimum? And their number, there's a very small city, their number came up to be $40. So I'm not teasing you. But I am teaching you a bit in the sense that I'm asking you to come to the table and work with us to try to set some of these service levels. Maybe it's $50. Maybe it's 50 megabits symmetrical, right, which is the fastest the cable company can provide at this point with their technology. Maybe you make it 75 to put the cable company out of business and bring all the folks over to your network so that you have all the customers on your network now. I can't make those decisions for you, I apologize, but those are the kinds of things I'm hoping staff would help.
At $9.95, we could do 25 megabit symmetrical, which is, it's a broadband, it's broadband, and far better than they could get today from anyone, for the most part.
And I think I don't know if I read your question correctly, what I'm questioning is the right side of the right column, which says, regardless of the service level provided, my cost of goods sold is $4.
Right.
I can provide max service level for $4 is my cost.
You bet.
The incremental cost to the provider.
You bet. It's easy. For this particular piece of the model, right, you can buy you can buy a data pipe with transport from CenturyLink for $12,000. In this model, you have 45% take rate. That's 22,000 homes. Okay? So you take 12,000 per month, divide it by the 22,000, right? Add another, it's really about $2.25. I budgeted up to $4, right? Trying to figure out what that could possibly be, but that number is about $4 per sub per month. The speed of the network is dependent upon the routers and the electronics. The electronics that this business case provides will do a gig today or 10 gigs next month. You just have to change out the box at your house. And the routers provide multi-terabit routing today. And so it can go at any speed. If you wanted to bring 400 gigs down here from Minneapolis, that router you have, it's the cards in it to support that today. So it's future-proof, but this cost of goods sold for the big carriers is less than $1. I know because I sell them all the equipment and the services that go along with it, so I can just tell you that straight face.
I think so that we don't have a long, protracted discussion, clearly there's a lot of data here, so I think at this point what we need to do is decide, does this bear further study, where do we want to go with this without, you know, digging into the detail in the context of today's meeting. So I'd be curious of people's thoughts. Where do you want to go with this?
What I would throw out is that I think there are 5 public entities that really should dig into these numbers and see if this meets their needs. First and foremost is obviously RPU, because RPU has to do something with smart grid anyway. It's going to be a huge expense anyway, and this potentially offsets that expense. So RPU should dig through these numbers. But in addition to that, there's a lot of technology needs from the library, who's very interested in being able to deliver services community-wide. A lot of library systems have become involved in this. Public Works, our IT finance obviously has a lot to look into with this. And also the school district, because that access issue, the fact that kids can't afford broadband today in this community is just, you know, killing the opportunity for these kids. And, I would be inclined to ask these areas and other areas that would be interested in meeting with with Michael to sit down and go through the numbers and test them out and see if their needs are being met and seeing if the numbers are reasonable, as a lot of our questions have indicated.
So let me just take one more minute. So $42 million is a big chunk of money to bite off to build a network. So there's risk involved. And I thought about this long and hard since we last met. And one of the things that I've been doing here in the United States is that a lot of communities like yourselves have just looked at this number, and sometimes they like the business case, and they hear from their constituents that they really want this. But sometimes this is just not necessarily an affordable thing for a community to do. So one of the things that our company has done is we have found a group of partners here in the United States and abroad, and I brought one of them with me today to just spend about 10 minutes with you. So you have the $42 million in your mind. You know what it will build. I wanted to convey that to you, but I wanted to introduce Scott Bradshaw, and I just wanted him to take 10 minutes of the council's time, if you're okay with that, and 10 minutes of the community's time, and offer you an alternative to what I've just shown you. And I think it would be worthwhile. Are you folks okay with that?
Well, we're 40 minutes into this 15-minute segment, so what's the plan for the rest of the evening?
What do we have? Stephen, how much time do you need for your staffing plan overview?
15, 20 minutes. I'm not sure.
So if we go till 4:45, another 10 minutes.
Okay. That would be perfect.
Okay. One suggestion I would make, I hope it's not a Freudian slip, but I would title your spreadsheet Rochester, not Richchester.
Typo.
Sorry.
All right.
Scott?
Hi, I'm Scott Bradshaw from Sci-Fi Network. Be mindful of the time. I'm literally going to try and bring this down to 2 minutes, and then I'll just leave it for you to digest. Sci-Fi Networks, we're an infrastructure developer, currently working with multiple cities across the U.S., where we're looking, or we are doing, should I say, we're privately fully funding, building, designing, operating, and managing citywide infrastructures. That being where we pass every single building throughout the community, we provide the opportunity to any single building, whether that be a residential, a business, a church, whatever it may be, the opportunity to receive fiber connectivity. We build that upon our dime. We spread out our amortization over a long period of time, and before anything is ever built, we work with multiple service providers because we build open access networks, where we work with them to achieve cost assurances at the beginning, where they enter into long-term minimum financial agreements with cities. So it's very much a lease agreement, so where we fund, build, and operate it, taking the city out of the equation from a resource perspective, so there's no additional increase in taxes. We're not asking you to capitally fund this. We will do that on your behalf. And like I said, we then present that to you on a cash positive from year one, P&L model over a period of time. I've just tried to do that in 30 seconds, and I'd articulate completely different any other time. But that really is it. So it's a open access, open services network. So it's the same service multiple times over multiple vendors. So it can be central, it can be charter, it can be out-of-state service providers offering the same service. As many people onto the network, we pick up the tab in building it. We take all the risk in the finance, the risk in the construction. We bring those cost assurances from multiple service providers that enter into long-term minimum financial agreements with the city. We lease that infrastructure to the city over a period of time. It is ultimately your network, so we hand over the keys to you once we've amortized our investment. Because it's your network, from day one, we're not building based on broadband. We're building based on where you want to be in the next 15 to 20 years. Broadband's great today, but we're very much, could we want to invest in you for a long period of time? We want to see where your economic development plan is. Is it smart grid? Is it smart metering? Is it sharing profits from service providers and reinvesting them back into your general fund to fund community projects? These initiatives we're looking for. So because we're going to give this infrastructure back to you after that period of time where we've amortized our investment, we're looking for your input. So it's a municipal environment, but it's actually a private project, private funds, no tax increases. but we give you the infrastructure. We share the profits we derive from ISPs that deliver service over the network 100% past every building. Anybody has the opportunity to receive fiber connectivity from day one through the lifetime of the project when they see fit, and it's cash positive from day one. The reason we do this, we've been doing this for the last 30 years. One of our founders is Roland Pigstock of the Pigstock Group, a diverse organisation, currently an organisation medium about $350 million. Current development book is about $2 billion at the moment. We deem fibre as a real estate product. It's a piece of land, which is your public right of way. There is a building, which is the fibre optic cable, and there are multiple people that rent space in that building, and that's just multiple service providers. The idea here, and actually that's not fair to say, the thought process here is that we allow these service providers that maybe not necessarily investing right now the opportunity to offer gigabit services, symmetrical services, straight off the bat. Our infrastructure is designed to be gigabit ready from day one. Anybody can receive that. So if Centrelink says, as an example, this is picking a name out of the air, we like to offer those services. We don't have maybe the capital, or we don't see the business model today. That's where Sci-Fi come in and say, well, actually, we take a long-term view. We're privately held. We don't need short-term stockholder-driven decisions. Therefore, we'll fund on our dime this environment. Will allow you to lease space office infrastructure, and you can offer any resident gigabit services as we build. As we build, we would anticipate here, we're in negotiations with Davenport, we have preferred partner status in Davenport, Ohio, and we believe around about 3 years it would take for us to build. Obviously, we haven't worked with Michael in regards to the numbers he's presented to you. I'm seeing them for the first time today. So we want to perform our own due diligence upon that. Our investors will want to perform our own due diligence upon that. The network is designed that literally, as we get that fibre in the ground, as we pass a block or premises, we release it for service. So we don't build your community and then release it for multiple service providers. Literally, as soon as we pass a building, it gets open for service, and that's how you start to create a sustainable environment. That, as well as we're paying off our investment interest rates, we have revenue coming straight on. A bit more details.
Did I hear you say that you front everything, you build it and then lease back?
Correct.
At the end?
So irrespective of the value, irrespective of how much money is going to be spent, whether it be $45 million or $100 million as another figure, we pick up that cost.
And I guess the only reason that caught my ear is some may remember several years ago we were offered that opportunity for our waste treatment facility. They would buy it and then lease it back to us, and that was demonstrated to be a horrible financial.
That we maintain ownership here.
Right.
I'm
just saying that catches my ear.
I don't know that story, but what I can say is maybe to add some kind of meat to the bone, we're not going to build this on spec. We're not going to build this and hope they come. This is it. We build on sustainability. Pigstock Group is renowned for long-term sustainability. We build the Walmarts of the world. So that's what I was saying about cost assurances. I'll present you with multiple P&L models, one that you, and then you choose which one is more applicable to the community. I'll say, well, based upon this one you've chosen, I will secure cost assurance first from multiple service providers that will guarantee, respectively, they will guarantee to pay you a minimum figure per year for X amount of years that you deem necessary from before this is even built. So it's self-maintaining, you have revenues coming from the beginning, and we can cash forecast accordingly. This allows us then to become cash positive from day one by allowing multiple service providers. What we're really doing there is diluting the risk. Rather than saying that if you take Michael's analogy of 45% penetration, we're not saying one Centrelink, you need to underwrite, so you need to be on the hook, 45%. I may have four service providers, each taking 11-point-something%, so I'm now diluting the risk. So each service provider only has to achieve 11% of the entire community. Because I'm passing 100% of the entire community, anybody can take fiber optic service. So any service provider that wishes to call on this is not driven by a Google model where it's that fiber hood, they can market the entire community. It allows them to be more astute and more creative in regards to their marketing. And that's driven that 11% over the entire city.
Okay, so we've expired our 10 minutes. So any final questions or, again, consensus of the council on where you want to go next? Mr. Hickey.
So, you know, if we're going to go forward and explore this with staff time, and we have to realize that's a valuable resource, I think we do need to bound this this exercise. I mean, I don't think there can be an unlimited amount of staff time spent on this. Right. I think there needs to be a checkpoint where we see if this is something that even passes a sanity check. But I don't think we want to spend a ton of staff time until we've done kind of that sanity check.
Okay, noted.
Agreed.
Anyone else? So maybe a question for Mr. Martinson. Is there a way we could make that sort of first pass, high level litmus test to see if the numbers seem to bear further exploration? Or what? Putting you on the spot.
Those are two totally different proposals.
Yes.
Right, right.
The first one requires, in my opinion, a lot of time with Sydney out of our computer. Hard not to say it's worth time spent looking at both of them, I guess.
Mr. Bugger.
Part of this is some of this information's new to me as of lunch today. So I get that there's a lot of information here. And I don't think we necessarily need to come to a consensus this minute. I think we're going to get some additional information and get a chance to go through it. And I would suggest beginning of September, let's revisit this discussion. But you know, in terms of, we have two viable proposals here that serve to potentially better the community from where we are today. So I would like to certainly study them and see if, in fact, they are as good as they appear to be. But because there's so much information here, and as Dale said, these are two completely different proposals. One is purely it's a private play with some public partnership, and the other is a public model. We probably have to look at it a little bit.
If I may, to help you in regards to the decision process, all I'm looking for me to help you is I'll put in a request for a certain type of information. Maybe some GIS, understand the kind of geography of the community. I'll work with Michael, see how he derives some of his assumptions. From there, on our resource and our dime, I'll do a lot of work, or the team will do a lot of work behind the scenes. We'll put some numbers together if it was a kind of a public-private partnership and we were picking up the bill under that lease model, and then I'll send them across to you. If they look like it's a direction you'd like to pursue, then we can do that process as well.
Mr. Russell?
I guess I'd like to run this to the RPU board and get their feedback on it. This seems like they'd be kind of the main starting point for us, and if they look at this and think it makes sense to pursue it, that would be some good feedback, or at least some feedback from them on what they see this as being. And I'm sure they're going to be open to, if it's a great opportunity, they're going to be open to that. If they have concerns, they're going to be open sharing those with us. And so I guess I'd maybe like to, by September then, or soon after, we should be able to have some feedback from them and get an idea where we should go with it.
September 10th, there's going to be a board study session, and we can certainly add that to the topics.
But one of the things we'll have to be cognizant of is our calendar. We're going to get into the fall, and our financial analysis capabilities are going to really dry up for a couple of months. Mr. Camp?
I think we should move forward and grant the authority for staff to answer these questions. I think it's not a significant bar to cross. I think the guidance of not getting quite mired in too much minutia at this point is probably direction enough. If we, and taking it to the RPU board, I'm supportive, but I also believe we can probably do a couple things in parallel. We don't have to wait for any particular roadblock to stop this. So I'd be supportive of just giving the authorization to answer the questions and move forward. And frankly, if staff comes back and says it's become burdensome, then we can tackle that at that point.
Well, I guess my thought with the RP board would give somebody somebody taking this and moving it forward, and they could talk and they could inquire to staff as they need to get data, and then get just somebody that's kind of the contact.
I already had this
group that's kind of the contact.
I had this guy in mind that was maybe a good idea for someone to work as a spearhead. He's completely. So I don't know if it makes sense to put under IT and say, can you run as just facilitate getting this through to different departments that need to answer the questions?
That was
a shrug of approval. I'm good at interpretation.
That's a shrug of approval.
The other part of this, too, is they don't have unlimited time either. And, they're probably going to want to come here for a day or two and do face-to-faces with people. So I just they don't have infinite time, and you know we're not paying them anything right now. So,
as was suggested, I think a good next step is to have review by the RBU board and get their sensitivity to this. Do they are they seeing this in the same positive way that some other people are? And then take some direction from there. I'm a little concerned with leaving it open-ended to staff, that because then they won't know. Well, do we dedicate 10 hours, 20 hours? Well,
we don't do that with any other requests. Well, I mean, that's fine, but if we're gonna pigeonhole this one and say here's the maximum number, then we're gonna be doing that on every single request to staff.
And we should.
Oh, instead of, I just think it's important. We could just give them the leeway to say, tell us if this becomes burdensome. I don't understand why we are setting how many hours.
That's a good point. I mean, it's we're talking, you know, to get things going between now and September 10th. Not a lot of time, but you know, I think we should at least allow staff to respond to requests and let us know if it's burdensome. I suspect it probably won't be too much so.
I do think that Dale was sort of indicating that he would rely mostly, I think, more on RPU than probably his own people.
So I'd be supportive, anyway. And I'd be supportive of putting RPU in the leadership. I just didn't see anyone from RPU here that could volunteer.
No, and part of it is, you know, we won't speak for them until the board meets. But until we say it's RPU, it's not RPU. So.
Okay. So it sounds like we're gonna hand it off to at least RPU board for some initial read on the viability of this, and then they will probably ask staff some questions and will respond to those questions unless it becomes too burdensome.
Okay.
I guess I'm just looking for some feedback, and to me RPU board can provide feedback, where if we ask staff, it's like, who are we asking in staff? I mean,
our other staff will participate along with it.
Right. I'm just looking for kind of a point, somebody on a point.
But I don't want it to be lost, though, gentlemen. I don't want it to be lost that we want the feedback about the other cities that are going through this process, because I think that's one of the more insightful components of this.
We'll definitely.
Perfect.
I mean, I have a list in my mind, but I just wrote this down, and I just wanted to get his concurrence. We need 8 hours.
Okay.
We need 8 hours of time. That's it. That's all I need. I need 8 hours. We'll send the questions, and I'm sure that we can accomplish everything that we need within 8 hours.
Would you want to do that here or remotely? Or
I'd love to do it here face-to-face if we have
Understood.
The time. But if we don't have the time, we'll do it over a webinar, and we'll do it over a series of webinars, probably 4 2-hour sessions. And we'll have, between Scott and myself, we'll have all the information we need. I think one comment. The key, to this gentleman's point, I think the key thing that may be incorrect, and this is where we need RPU, is the amount of mileage. Because all the lights go on, even though I have approximately 600 miles in there, depending upon how the 1-aught, 2-aught, and 3-aught was counted, and how it was put together could be a key issue. And there's where we need RPU to really answer that question. We'd love to have one short session here with the staff, if you could, but we'll try to be very respectful of your time.
That's awesome.
You okay with that?
Ms. Means?
I'm just wondering if it wouldn't be important to RPU is going to be the lead.
Let's let RPU decide that.
Yeah, let them figure it. I mean, he's asked for about 8 hours. I think we can, for something this big, we can look at 8 hours as reasonable.
I would think that Public Works and IT would certainly be integral to that group to make the assessments. Digging in the ground.
Perfect. It's going to have to be a team of them. Bridget's got the public right away, and the RPU got right away in poles, and it sounds like they want to loosen those poles. We're going to have a discussion.
Go team. So once we get the information, we'll establish some schedule.
Outstanding. Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Moving on to our final topic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I just want to make a brief introduction before Linda starts us, and that is
Let's say we know Linda.
And I haven't been. I purposely have not involved myself in the department has exercise for this because I didn't think that I wanted to somewhat taint what their outcome might be. And while I hope that I could support them as much as possible, I have not yet been involved. I haven't seen it, the presentation I'll be presenting to you today. And I will probably be making you know, I may hopefully make some of their recommendations. I don't know at this point if I would or not. From your standpoint, by the 30th of September, we need to adopt the maximum property tax limitation. By that time, you'll have some pretty good idea of what you would need in order to levy, in order to kind of state where we are right now. And if you want to add any of those additional positions, then we would need from you at least some consensus on the amount of money that you might provide. You may not have an idea. You may have an idea individually of the positions that you might want to recommend yourselves. But from at least my standpoint, when you adopt that property tax maximum, I would like to know how much of that you have designated towards any of these positions that maybe have been requested. And that would be some significant assistance at that point.
And I've got some comments to share on that topic when Linda wraps up.
Okay, great. Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, council members and other guests. Thank you for allowing the department heads to have some fun on your agenda today. What I am going to share are the collective thoughts of all the department heads that have been working on staffing issues for the last probably 2 or 3 months. And so it's an honor to be here and share this information with you. From a background perspective, I want to share that this input comes from all department heads that participated in the conversations that we have. And number two, what I'm sharing today is supported by all the department heads. The objectives that we started off with when we started talking about staffing is we wanted to provide the council members with a long-term view of staffing needs in the city. So for many years, we have had limitations on the number of people that we could hire in given coming years because of budget restrictions. And so we thought it would be good if we would step back and take more of a strategic perspective on how we staff the organization going forward. So that was one of our objectives. The second one was to put some staffing priorities or to share our staffing priorities with you as council members. We realize that we place you in a precarious position when we ask you to determine which positions we're going to hire, and yet many of us are working together on this whole perspective when we hire staff. So we want to come to you with a unified voice as to what we think the staffing priorities are in the city of Rochester. The second thing that's also different with that is many times when we've made presentations to you, we've presented from our individual department perspective. We think that it is more appealing to come to you with a unified voice and talk about what's best for the city of Rochester and as well as our departments. But that's a different approach than what we've perhaps taken in the past. And that's not to say that we haven't had conversations when we've talked about staffing in the past as to which priorities exist in the city, because that certainly has taken place. But we do want to have more of a unified presence with you relative to staffing needs. And the third point is that we also want to share our input as to how we fund these positions, knowing that at the end of the day, it has to be affordable to the city of Rochester. Mm-hmm. So with that said, from a background perspective, a few other key points I want to make. The staffing model that I will share with you covers the years 2016 through 2020. It addresses also the backlog of unfunded positions in the city, so you're going to see some positions here that you've requested in the past that have not been filled. They will also be on the list. This has very much been a collaborative approach. There has certainly been give and take on the part of the department heads who have come together as we've talked about whose priorities or which priorities are needed. And what's been so enlightening about that conversation is that it always circles back to what's in the best interest of the citizens. So I'm proud of the conversations that we've had and that have taken place. It also recognizes the challenges that we face as being a growing city. There are more services that are going to be required of the city as we continue to grow, and we know that that is a little bit taxing when it comes to staffing and how we afford the change that we may need to make from that perspective. We also made the assumption that you want us to maintain the current service levels that we provide to the citizens of Rochester. In other words, we're not diminishing. Perhaps we may even enhance some of those. And then lastly, we always believe that there's opportunities to improve efficiencies. That's a given in this whole conversation as I go forward. Those opportunities always exist. I think a great example of where we're having that conversation across the city is with the IT Integration Committee. They're making progress in identifying ways that we can capitalize on the technology and the software that we have in the city, so it's very encouraging to see that. But with everything that I present today, all of us as department heads agree that there still will exist opportunities for process improvements and things of that nature. So that's a given. And then lastly, we thought by providing a long-term strategic plan relative to staffing that we can help reduce the variability relative to the budget implications. So we've made a concerted effort to really spread the costs over a number of years so that we don't have one year that's really high and then a couple years that are hardly any funding would be needed for. So it balances more appropriately the budgetary impact. All right, so to start out, funding sources. We believe there's two different ways to fund the positions that we're going to request. One is to look at the general fund. The general fund, the major income source, of course, that we often talk about in these committee of the whole meetings is the property tax. But we also recognize that there are fees and charges that are generated by a few of these departments or divisions that feed into the general fund, that being funds that are generated from building safety, the city clerk, the engineering land development division, the Mayo Civic Center, and then Parks and Recreation. What's different about our proposal than what we've talked about in the past, we also believe that we should be funding some of these positions through enterprise funds, which basically the source of revenue comes only from fees and charges. We think that when we offer these services and we have to take staff that have to run those, that the fees and charges should cover the staffing implications or the staffing requirements. I should make a disclaimer at this point that we're only on the preliminary end of our analysis. I mean, we have a proposal as to the cost of the position. When it comes to the enterprise funds, we have not worked all the way through to determine how much of those current revenues can support the increase in employment or positions that we're requesting. So there's a little bit of legwork to do, and the only reason that's not done at this point is because we're still in the front end of our budgeting process. But we do believe that many of these positions can be funded through existing revenues. We also recognize that some positions may have to be funded by new fees or services. Those divisions that mostly are impacted by these enterprise funds, of course, are the sewer utility, the stormwater utility, and parking utility. All right. Now, I also have a few slides I want to share because we all believe, as I learned a minute ago, that there's opportunities for efficiency. We've all tried to do more with less, but at some point, you have to ask yourself, if our staff is tapped out. So I think we have to balance both of those perspectives. So I want to share some different slides that the various departments have brought forward. So the first one is from the Public Works Department. And by the way, my colleagues are all here, so if I miss anything, please jump in and correct me as I go through your slides. But this first slide basically shows the increase in services relative to the staffing level and relative to the population. So if you look at the dotted line across the top, in 1990, we had a population of 70,745, and currently in 2014, we're just approaching 112,000. So the population level has continued to increase. What's on the left-hand axis here are the number of employees that we currently have. If you look at the next line, it's a lighter blue line going up the top. That represents the miles of streets. So in 1990, we had about 269 miles of streets, and today we have about 533. The next red line represents the miles of sanitary sewer mileage. So we started at 268, and we're up to 479 in 2014. The orange line represents, again, miles of stormwater at 129 to 330. And the bottom line, the flat line, represents our staffing levels. So what you can see here is, I hope you can appreciate that we have done more with less and that there has been some efficiency here, and that's, I think, what this slide demonstrates as much as anything. But as the demand for services has gone up, the staffing levels have pretty much remained the same. Moving along to the Rochester Fire Department, these two slides basically show the number of firefighters per 1,000 population. So in 2001, we had approximately 1.04 firefighter to serve every 1,000 citizens that we had. In 2014, we have 0.85 firefighters for every 1,000. So again, as our population has gone up, we have fewer firefighters. And the bottom slide basically just shows that as a comparison to the national average. The national average that exists for firefighters per 1,000 population is 1.7. So you can see we're about half of what the national average is in our Rochester Fire Department. If you look at the number of runs in the fire department, in 2005, they completed a total of 6,534 runs. If you fast forward to 2014, you're going to see that they completed a total of 9,107. If you take that information and you project it into the future, let me see, I wrote this down so I get this right for you.
4%.
4% annual increase over the 10-year increase that's shown here, it represents a 39% increase, but it's a 4% annual increase. If you project that forward, you can see the trend line is going to continue to go up, and by 2039, we expect to be banking about 25,000 runs. Continuing on, if you look at this from another angle and you look at the number of runs without medical service or EMS, that's a little bit flatter line. In 2005, we had 2,672 runs, and in 2014, we had 3,116 runs. So that would be for fire calls, for community assistance of some sort, or perhaps commercial alarms, or anything that's non-medical related. And so that's running at about a 2% annual increase per year, but if you project that out to 2039, we expect to be completing about 5,000 runs without EMS. Now, from a finance department, we look at number of transactions completed. Transactions could be general ledger transactions, accounts payable, accounts receivable, insurance claims, whatever it may be. They track the number of transactions. So in 1995, the thicker orange line here represents the number of FTEs. We had about 11 FTEs processing roughly, I would say, about 15,000 transactions. That's the red line that's starting in the middle of that bar. So we had about one full-time equivalent processing about, just rough estimate, about 13,000 or 1,300 entries. If you go to 2015, you will now see we're completing 50,000 transactions with just about the same staff of 12 employees. So what we did before, if you benchmark that, of one FTE to about 1,300 transactions, one FTE now completes about 4,200 transactions. So again, this makes another case that we are doing more with less and that we are efficient. The question is, have we tapped into our resources more than we should have? Or are they overworked? It's a workload issue as well. All right, another interesting benchmark for the finance department. Here you have the total city budget compared to finance. And you know what? The finance budget is a black line across the bottom, but it's so small that when I put this on the PowerPoint, the line doesn't even show up. So it's, but the point to be made, as the city budget has increased, the finance budget is actually decreasing. And largely, again, because they have fewer FTE resources to use. All right, and lastly, this chart represents the FTE relative to city population. So you can see for every 1,000 citizens we had in 1995, the finance department had 0.14 employees. If you move forward to 2015, as the population has rose to, well, I think it's less than 120,000, and I just said another 112, today you can see we have fewer FTEs to support that. We're at 0.1. So again, this makes the note about efficiency and workload. All right, Mayo Civic Center square footage. What is shown on this graph is number of employees versus FTE. So the lighter blue line represents the square footage at the Mayo Civic Center, and the darker blue line represents the FTEs. So you can see in 1984, which was a number of years ago, we were inverted relative to where we are today. The point to be made on this slide is that with the expansion at the Civic Center, the square footage is going to dramatically increase, not quite double, but yet we currently today have the same staff. So for Donna to have staff to maintain that location is, again, I would say almost impossible with the current staffing levels. From an HR standpoint, what I've done here, and you've heard me talk about this as well, is I just benchmarked, again, a transaction, just one transaction. We do many transactions, but this is an interesting one. On any given month, probably for the last 8 years, we generally generate about 1,200 payroll checks for employees. That's full-time employees and part-time temporary employees. So the line on the top represents an industry average. Industry says for HR departments to staff, usually you have about one full-time FTE HR person for every 100 employees. So because we have such a mix, a heavy mix of seasonal influence here, you have to use, rather than your FTE count, it's a better benchmark is to use your payroll count because that's representative and reflective of the amount of work that goes on in a given department. So as I have said before in many of our meetings, the number of HR employees in the city of Rochester, you can see below the industry line, if in 2015 we were staffed appropriately, we would have 13 employees on our team versus the 9 that we currently have. And I would even venture to argue that the industry standard of 1 to 100 is not right for our government organization because of the complexity of having 19 bargaining units. It's very different, and many times that number is adjusted given the complexity of the organization. Ours is such an organization. This other slide that I want to show, another activity that takes a significant amount of time, primarily from Tim and Jennifer, who are both here today, is the recruiting activity. And I went back into the records, and since I've been here, and actually before I've been here, the HR team, or the HR function, has staffed 2 FTEs for recruitment activity. So you can see in 1994, each recruiter would handle about 1,000 applications. Today, we are hovering around 3,500 applications. Now, part of that, of course, is due to the electronic age. But I will say that every one of those applications that comes in has to be processed. And I will also say the complexity of how we recruit today is vastly different than how we recruited in 1994. So it's a workload issue, or is the purpose of this graph. And the last one, again, you've seen this graph before, but this shows the total workers' comp cost for the city of Rochester. In the last 5 years, we've spent about $2.75 million. As many of you know, I'm requesting a safety manager. I have for the last 2 years, and part of the reason is I think that we can reduce these costs. These costs won't go away, but I do think that there potentially could be some cost savings in this particular area if we were staffed appropriately. So, next steps. Next steps aren't coming up. Whoops. Well, I'll tell you what the next steps are. Sorry about that. We'd like you to
finish. Good sign.
Finish PowerPoint.
I have a handout for you. So here's the staffing proposals. There's 2 of them. We have 2 staffing, one funded with the general fund and one funded by enterprise fees. So if you both just take a copy of this, you can review them. I won't go through this right now because I think this is just information that
it hurts my eyes.
Look at and that well and read this small that's good. But you will see that what we've done in the staffing model is that we've broken it out into 2 categories. And so on each document you will see the positions by department that we are requesting. The number of positions, and then the total projected wages and benefits. So you see that we've gone out 5 years, the best that we could, based on what we know today. And we've given you the actual costs that we think will be impacted if we fill these positions. There's approximately 36 positions we're requesting on both of these handouts. So again, this is the preliminary starting point of what we're requesting. And that's for your consideration. My concluding comment is that we ask that you give this serious consideration for adoption. However, if further conversation is warranted, we would ask that you invite the department head back to a future committee of the whole meeting so that we can have that dialogue with you given the conversations that we've already had as a group. So with that, my colleagues and I will entertain any questions that you have.
I just want to be clear that you're suggesting that both of these are adopted simultaneously. So it's not like 2 separate plans. They're 2 components of the same plan.
One is tax, one is fees.
Perfect. There we go. I was wondering how you got Roger to agree to 0 police officers, but I was looking at the wrong
slide. And I think what's important in that comment is, especially on the fees, because we heard earlier from some earlier presentation that some positions could be accommodated by fees and services. The FOG coordinator, I think, is one that comes to mind. That some of those positions, I don't want to say somewhat of a wash, in other words, that some of those positions can be accommodated by fees or new fees and so forth.
Yes.
Other comments, questions? I agree. First off, let me just say, I really appreciate this. This is exactly what business does. You can't look at a year in isolation. Having a longer-term strategy and a 5-year horizon is certainly very typical. So I do appreciate the effort because it does give us a sense of what to expect in coming years as well. So thank you very much for the effort.
Well, actually, thank you to all the department heads because they really did a good job.
It's going to take a little bit. There's a lot of numbers here to digest, but right. Just looking at the way it's laid out and everything, I think you guys did a fantastic job. I thank you to all the staff for coming together and doing this. And, you know, it's I'm sure as much as we have to process it, I'm sure Stephen's going to have to process it even more so. But it's it takes what seems like a really undoable number that's in front of us before and makes it a little bit more doable.
That was our goal, was to help you problem solve. I think before we felt like we left you hanging on a limb a little bit and we could have done a better job, so that was ultimately one of the objectives we were trying to achieve, was to give you some more input and thoughts and a better solid recommendation than what we've done in the past. Not certainly to circumvent the administrator in any fashion, because he does a great job as well, but just to augment you with a little bit more information.
So just as a checkpoint, if I added all the numbers up for 2016, is that going to equal the 50 or so, Stephen, that you talked about?
I think it's 36, Randy. I was just counting before.
So that's the point I wanted to make. So as part of this analysis or exercise that you've done to date, you worked together and actually brought that number down significantly from the 50 or so that we originally thought it might be.
Correct. And as we try to balance the expenses, we've talked about that. How can we move some of these positions around so it is doable?
Okay.
And so that led into that as well. Come in.
So the wages and benefits that are being projected, do I have two different numbers?
Yes.
So I sum those to get the yearly,
you do.
And these are just increases. This doesn't include reclassification?
That's correct.
Okay, so
these are new positions only.
Roughly $2 million in 16 were the taxes and roughly $870 for fees.
Right.
If
you approved all of these.
One of the things I noticed is that, I mean, I appreciate the breakout. Some of these are would be a redirection of existing fees, which would mean that it kind of falls to the levy then anyway.
Yes.
So, like, the example of the hotel tax ones, I mean, it is what it is, but...
Yes. Are you talking about the general fund?
Yeah, maybe that's the only one.
Well, if
you took
the Civic Center, for instance, and paid by basically the hotel motel tax, but it then is... Any additional money going into staff is takes away from the amount of money that goes into the general fund to offset the other costs.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
But that would be public works.
Additional funding gaps because of the additional space and the additional activities.
That would be public works. It doesn't. It just the department. So that's just a continuation of the page before it.
I tried to front back each page. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it just doesn't say the marketing director, although those are public works.
Continuation of the public works.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
All right.
I'm a bit of a technophile. Are these look like Excel spreadsheets? Would there be a way you could distribute it to us? Perfect. If you would do that, that would
I like that.
Help
you.
Yeah,
how
should we kill the trees too?
Well, I just, you know, when I start flipping and then I get lost, and there's a lot of numbers.
We're getting to be a pretty tech-savvy group here.
Yes, you are.
All right.
Maybe with one shaking his head exception.
Questions or comments? This will be very helpful.
This is
appreciated. Thank you.
This is great.
For your work.
I think one thing would be to. Do we want to maybe talk about it next week again, just to see if the council has time to review it and decide if this? Because I think you were looking for insight about how much else we wanted to do.
By the third, I think on the 29th of September, our committee of the whole, or we would probably have. Recessed council meeting to adopt that preliminary property tax levy, which needs to be done by the 30th of September.
28th.
And by that time, and what you'll know pretty much what the amount of tax levy you need to establish to keep everything like it is. What I'd like to know is how much you're going to put into new positions, at least in tax levy, and then we can take it from there. Now, I'd probably give you some of my thoughts about what I would recommend prior to that time.
Well,
and even on just the fees, I wouldn't necessarily recommend a position just because I think it's covered by fees.
And we're really looking about 1% increase in the tax levy for every $500,000. Right? But for every $500,000, we're looking about 1%.
That's what I wanted to talk about. And this goes beyond just the staffing, but Stephen, you had given us some information that...
Very preliminary at this stage, but...
Right, understood, preliminary, but it implies that we're looking at roughly a 4.6% increase in the levy just to accommodate our contractual obligations, labor contracts and so forth, as well as some amount for inflation and so forth.
Right.
It doesn't allow for any of the new positions.
No.
Which
we're now, there was an extra $500,000 in the CIP, which may not, that I stuck in there.
But then again, that's balanced off by about the amount of money we actually spent on overtime has been much higher than appropriated. And so I think on that figure, there's about 1.2 in overtime monies, but it's been more pushing 1.5 to 1.6, so
right. That
may all balance out anyway.
But here's my
so
point.
So it'll be like about 4.6 to stay just where we are.
Right.
Without being offset by any new
growth. And I get that. What I want to talk about is what we might, and I'm going to suggest that we set our initial levy when we get to that point, and it'll be a good discussion, set that number at 7%. And here's why. You've given us a number of about 4.6. That allows for contractual obligations and so forth, no new positions. We know that each additional 1% equates to about $530,000, roughly. That, in my mind, equates in turn to about 5 positions, if you, again, using rough numbers, accounting for salary and benefits. It seems like we do this every year to ourselves. We're going to set an initial levy, and then we box ourselves in. We know we can come down, but we can't go up. So I'm gonna put it out there that we allow ourselves about that 2% cushion, and for discussion purposes, put it out there at 7%, and then go from there. Because again, that additional 2% would allow us to at least have a meaningful discussion. That would potentially fund as many as 10 positions, give or take, whatever the numbers are. So I just wanted to get that out there, and rather than dance around that question, because otherwise if we come in at 4.6 and then we immediately turn around and put the screws to staff to try to bring that down just so that we can justify a handful, literally a handful of positions, it just seems like I'm getting tired of that song. We're way too many verses into it. So, Mr. Wojcik.
Part of it is, the whole preliminary levy is an exercise in silliness put onto us by the state.
Agreed.
And I am of the position that we figure out what the maximum number can be every year and just put it there because it doesn't mean anything anyways. And it kind of a like, okay, state, you want to play this game? Let's play this game. Because the number doesn't mean anything, but kind of going along with your thinking, we have some guidance here. We have with some staff. As long as the preliminary levy allows us to fund continuing operations, we definitely need some more in the CIP, and cover the recommended positions. Maybe we trim it down a little bit between now and then. But I would just want it to cover those, and then we can go from there. And that might be even beyond where you're at.
I agree. And we're agreement on the philosophical point that we shouldn't arbitrarily box ourselves in based on some preliminary numbers. That's an exercise in futility. Let's set the number at a high enough level. And again, we can always ratchet that in as we gain more insight.
And maybe one other caveat, too. And I hear this being said all the time, and people need to understand there's a difference between their property increases and the levy percentage.
Yes.
And we have significant property coming online, and people don't realize that, if we set it at 7% this next year, they're going to end up with about an inflationary level increase there.
Right.
So
because we have the taxable base increases and so forth. But I just wanted to get that out there rather early on rather than necessarily wait until this camp.
I don't know. I guess I don't know where the 7% number comes from. I completely agree with what you guys have said so far. I guess my hope would be we can, like I think Michael was pointing out, that we can set something that will allow us to set the maximum at approving what staff has brought in, and then work as you peel things off and as we look to get to whatever the final number is and we figure out what the capacity comes online. I think that's a good way to handle it.
And quite simply, where I came up with that number, I took the 4.6, I added a couple percent to it to allow us at least discussion.
The state fudge factor. Yeah.
And then I just rounded it. just to start the discussion.
I like it.
Comments, questions?
I'm very glad that you did round it out to about 7% to give us the cushion. What concerns all of us is that the workload of the staff and how they can continue to function at the high level they have been with so few people. And the workman's comp is really concerning, and that safety position might be one that I sure would support.
And again, to Mr. Wojak's comment, I threw that out there as just a discussion point. If it turns out to be a different number, I'm happy with that. The whole point being, we shouldn't start to just lock ourselves into an arbitrarily low figure and then find out all we can do is go lower than that.
When do we find out the change in capacity?
Dan, you need to answer that?
After we set
it's always late in the process.
Late
in
the process.
That's right.
Process. Yeah,
all you'll have is you get a fall abstract in September. I've got a spring abstract number that I think I shared with Mr. Hayden. You get a constituent that talked to him that we've got roughly 3.7% increase in total estimated market value, and about 2 percentage points of that is valuation changes, and 1.7 is new construction, which is pretty similar to what last year was, but a little bit more than last year. A lot of what you're seeing getting constructed now and what's driven our building permit numbers really won't come on for another 2 years yet, or, you know, it lags about 2 years behind what you're seeing in permit revenue. So it's not a huge number, but it's still heading back in the right direction again from what it's been rather than flat prior to the last year or two. So.
All right, so we'll consider that as we entertain those preliminary numbers in September. We have one other business, real quick item, that Mr. Freeze, you wanted to talk about a walk-on item for tonight?
Yeah, is with the council's indulgence, I need to work with Terry between now and the end of your meeting today to walk an item on. We have an opportunity to apply for a grant of $1 million, and it requires that the county be the applicant, because that's the project that's in the county water plan. It's a city stormwater pond north of Little Bob's, between Little Bob's and Foster Aaron's. It's in your CIP, it's a $1.9 million project. We have the opportunity to get a $1 million grant, but the county wants a resolution to take to the county board on their meeting 27th, I think it is. And so Steve and I just met with the county administrator today, and he's pretty insistent he's going to need a resolution to introduce to the board. So
doing what?
The resolution will be authorizing the city and the county to enter into this, to ask the county to apply for the funds, and the county will incur no cost, being the sponsor and recipient of the funds. So they're concerned about staff costs for transactions and payments and things like that, which should be minimal to the degree that we only see one reimbursement from them. But they want something in writing from us that basically commits.
They're touchy about 16th Street, and they don't want to have any cost added to them on this one.
Right, understood. But the city is the beneficiary of this case.
Correct. We get the money, they just basically get passed through them, and they've got to do some grant administration.
Right.
Part of it, they want their cost to be covered by us.
Okay.
I don't have to do anything.
And will that be introduced under other business? Or?
Yeah. So I will be working on the resolution and passing it on to Terry for looking.
Yeah, we can do that any time. What we need is the official action. So what you need to do is a very brief RCA, asking them to do what you just asked them to do.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what that amount is for the transactional fees?
It should be nominal. Again, we're going to just ask them for one reimbursement check at the end of the project, so it's kind of one transaction. It should be less than maybe $1,000.
Thank you. All right. Anything else for this afternoon?
Yeah, any questions on the bond issues this evening? I've still got people that I can follow up if you have any other questions that are more technical than I think I can answer.
Well, I think we're pretty well swimming in numbers today.
Love it.
All right.
Thank you.
If there's nothing else, we'll see you this
Thank
evening.
You, Linda.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know what? We took your advice. Steven, the garbage is sticking around,
Randy.
Oh,
so I sent it back.